It's now time for Just the Terror with Nick Guerra.
On his list.
I grew up in a smaller town, which has since become a lot bigger thanks to the big tech company and also a Toyota plant that opened up on the outskirts of said town. When I was in high school, it was relatively small. It was kind of a terrible town. It's now just slightly less terrible, and I moved away when I was 18 to Toronto. I'm in my early 40s now, so this story happened a long time ago. Anyway, there had been a murder in the city. A guy in his mid-20s broke into some young woman's apartment, waited for her to come home from work, and then stabbed her to death. This was pretty big news since there weren't a lot of murders that happened in my hometown. Luckily, the guy was caught shortly after the murder and arrested. A few days later, there was a knock at my door. Standing there were two police officers. One of them asked for my name. I said, "Yes, that's me." The first officer introduced himself and his partner as Detective So-and-so, and then asked if I knew the guy who was arrested for murder. I said, "No, I've never seen or heard of him. Why?" They asked me to think about it for a moment. Was I absolutely sure I hadn't met him, even in passing? No, I had never, ever met or seen this man. Why? I asked again. They said they had searched through his apartment after the murder. They found a numbered list with 8 names written down. The woman who he had stabbed to death was listed as number 1 along with her physical attributes and where she worked. My name was also written on the list, as well as a physical description, blonde hair, brown eyes, and where I went to high school. I was listed as number 2. I'd never met him, never even heard of this guy. He was in his mid-20s and I was in high school. The police never followed up with me after that, and I never found out why I was on his list.
What went wrong?
I went camping 6 years ago with my boyfriend at the time. We drove through some rough trails and found this beautiful campsite. It was next to hiking trails that led to natural hot springs and a huge waterfall. We were in the middle of nowhere. Absolutely no one was around. We set up camp next to the car, went hiking, soaked in the hot springs, came back and had dinner. It was all very normal, until we woke up the next day. I need to give some context as to how we slept that night so you can understand my confusion. Before we went to sleep, I put our food cooler and a stereo that we brought in the car and locked it. I put the keys in the front pocket of my backpack and put the backpack next to my sleeping bag on the far side of the tent, away from the door of the tent. My boyfriend at the time slept nearest the door of the tent with a gun next to him. We woke up the next morning and I felt fine. I had slept hard. From the inside of the tent, everything seemed normal. When we got out, our campsite was absolute chaos. The fire pit we had made was ruined, the cooler had been thrown, and the food was scattered all over the place. The stereo was smashed to pieces laying next to a tree. All of the car doors were open, including the trunk. We stood there for a minute in silence, just taking everything in. The woods felt off now. It was quiet. And not the beautiful campsite that I saw yesterday. Everything about those woods felt wrong. My ex accused me of not locking the car the night before and that an animal got into our stuff. I promised that I had locked it and went into the tent to grab the keys from my backpack, but they weren't there. I found them later on the ground right next to the car. We quickly threw everything in the trunk and left. My ex was quiet and wouldn't talk to me about what had just happened. He finally spoke up when we were almost home. He told me that he had had a dream that night about something kneeling over him in the tent, holding his gun and just staring at him. When I tried to ask him more questions, he got quiet again. He said he didn't want to talk about it and that I shouldn't talk about it anymore either. I've tried to forget, but I can't. Something really happened to us in the woods that night.
Two for the price of one.
This happened about 3 years ago. My boyfriend and I moved into a house with a couple of roommates near downtown. It was in a big city of Michigan. Just for reference, my boyfriend is about 6'3", 275 to 300 pounds, very stocky, has a military style haircut, and usually always wears a shirt with guns on it, and has a fierce beard. I'd sent him to the store for some staples while I started unpacking. He texted me just after getting this door saying he had the weirdest thing happen in the parking lot, but he would tell me when he got home. 10 minutes later, he texted again saying he was super creeped out. He jokingly said, "If I'm not on my way in 5, send help." This is normal for his kind of humor. When he got home, he told me that on his way in from the parking lot, a man stopped him and started complimenting him on his beard. This happened a lot, so he didn't think much of it. The guy was dressed as if he were a lawyer or a real estate agent, with nice shoes and a nice watch. Very clean cut, so he wasn't uncomfortable. He said thanks and began walking inside. The guy continued walking with him, asking where he was from, what he did for a living, and if he had kids or a wife. My boyfriend's gut lit up like fireworks, and after working in a mental health facility, he knew to trust it. He made up answers and told him to have a nice day. The man said, "If you're ever interested in a new line of work, you're just the guy we're looking for." My boyfriend continued walking without responding and didn't look back. A few minutes into shopping, he noticed the same man was appearing in the same aisles as him, but would then turn around and go the other way. At one point, he said he was sure the man snapped a photo of him from the other end of the aisle. We both commented on the craziness and said, "It's gotta be about trafficking or something," but we let it go. It was over now, and we didn't really want to believe it. Days later, we ran to the store to pick up some late night snacks. We parked the car what felt like miles from the store and began walking in. Thankfully, I don't really startle easy when we're out together because we both conceal carry. I know if someone tried to attack either of us, we're decently prepared. But I still jumped when a man's voice yelled out my boyfriend's name and added, "And his pretty wife." My boyfriend said, "Keep walking and don't hesitate." Thankfully, I knew what he meant. I hauled myself into the entryway of the store and I watched them walk and talk. I kept my eye out for any suspicious people or cars around them. When they were almost inside, I went in the store and started chatting with the greeter so the man couldn't have a chance to talk with me. The man again showed up in the aisles that we were in. At one point, he looked to be texting on his phone, but he was holding it up in front of him. I was almost positive that he took a photo of us. We didn't finish getting snacks and we just left the store. I waited with the greeter as my boyfriend got the car so I didn't have to walk through the dark lot. Around this time, I'd been a powerlifter at that point for a little over a year and was in great shape. I was in the gym every day at the same time due to my work schedule. I usually had my girl roommate with me, but one day, I was alone for a quick and light lifting session. I wasn't a minute into my gym time when that same guy walked in. I had never seen him there before and instantly felt like vomiting. I texted my boyfriend, but he was away for the military, so he was now panicking from a distance. I thought to myself, "Remember your training and keep your cool." The man wasn't in gym attire and didn't have a bag with him. He came over and said hello. I politely said hello back, but I didn't continue the conversation. He said a few more things. A guy a few machines over could tell I was uncomfortable. He came over and pretended to be my friend and asked if I was ready to go. I said yes, and I just needed to grab my things. The creeper man asked where my husband was, and I pretended not to hear him as I kept walking. When I came out, he was gone, but my new best fake friend was waiting on the bench outside the locker room. He said that the man had left, but he had let the staff know what happened. They said he wasn't even a member, but he was there to pick up his girlfriend. My new BFF walked me to my car and I switched gyms. Thankfully, we now live far, far away from the city. I've never encountered that man again and neither has my boyfriend. I honestly believe that they were trying to recruit him to make big money selling women and that I was just a bonus woman to sell. Thank God for strangers who stand up and save women. You guys will never realize just how important you are.
Something dragging in the attic.
About 3 years ago, I moved into a duplex with my ex in what we thought was a safer part of the city. One of our neighbors, Amber, works in the duplex rental office, and her husband, Ed, worked as a landscaper for the place. At the time, he was fresh out of prison. If he wasn't doing typical landscape work, he was usually at home just tinkering with his mower or truck. They're both super nice people, very kind and loving towards others, and always offer to help out. We have smoked weed together a few times, Ed smokes more than Amber, and talked about all kinds of things, so I thought I could trust them and I felt very safe being their neighbor. On one smoke session, Ed had his shirt off. He had at least 3 visible swastika tattoos on his body. This confused me because Amber and Ed are super Wiccan.
She had Wicca tattoos all over and stuff. I just figured his tattoos were for protection in the prison. I once mentioned how sometimes when I'm home alone, I hear steps in the attic over my room and what sounds like a chair being dragged. How sometimes the noises follow me around the house. It always freaks me out to the point of calling someone just to feel a little safer until the noises die down. Ed said, "What? You think we're spying on you?" He said it in a laughing way, but it creeped me out a little. A few months ago, I broke up with my boyfriend and he moved out. Ed started texting me asking if I wanted to smoke while Amber was still at work. I declined every time, finding different excuses because I still felt uncomfortable around him. Then he asked if I wanted to have sex with him because he thinks Amber is cheating on him. I definitely shut that down. It was awkward. I didn't tell Amber because I didn't want to get kicked out or have some horrible tension, and I hate confrontation, so I just kept quiet. That's when I started to hear things in the attic above my room more often. It freaked me out even more when I woke up to a loud bang outside my front door at about 3 or 4 a.m. When I went to examine it, there is a small lockpick outside my door on the ground, and no one was around. I kept the lockpick, and the next day I texted a picture of it to Amber to let her know that I thought someone was creeping around. And she said, "Oh, that's Ed's. That's his ice pick. Not a lockpick, sweetie. No one can pick your deadbolt lock with that." But I know the difference in a 4-inch skinny lockpick and an ice pick. I'm so scared to be alone here, especially at night. Our attics connect, and it's not outlandish to think he could be up there spying on me. I even found a freshly drilled hole in the ceiling of my room. I just put wadded up paper in it and tried not to think of it. I stopped hanging out with them. I would only speak to them if we were both outside at the same time. I thought about calling the police, but I really have no evidence. I still have the lockpick and pictures of my door being messed with, but when I've gone into the attic, it's been completely empty. I've never gone in alone because it's an opening in my garage. There's no ladder, so it requires two people. It's very hard to get into without good upper body strength. I'm staying with my new boyfriend until I move out in a few weeks, despite my neighbors being upset that I'm leaving.
Watched us leave.
This happened one summer on a Wednesday night. My boyfriend and I were both home from college, working as hard as we could to save up money for the next semester. My boyfriend lived about an hour and a half away with his parents, so it was hard to meet up. We had work, we lived far. Finally, one day, he and I both had some time off, so he came down to visit me. After having dinner with my parents, we decided that we wanted some alone time. So, we picked up some root beer floats from Sonic, and we drove out to a local state park where young couples like to hang out. We parked, and we walked out to one of those little covered picnic tables in the woods. Now, even though the parking lot was well lit, the picnic table was quite dark. This was because of how thick the woods were around it. We hung out there late into the night before, so we always felt perfectly safe. But for some reason, I just felt nervous sitting in the dark this time. Another couple popped out of the woods past where we were, and they started making out leaning up against the other end of the table we were at. So we moved to my boyfriend's pickup. My boyfriend turned on the radio, and we sat in silence, just eating our ice cream before too much of it melted away. Due to the heat, we had the windows rolled down. After a bit, the couple we'd seen come out of the woods left. Looking around, I realized something odd. Although there were normally at least half a dozen vehicles parked in this lot on any evening, we were here alone, the only vehicle in sight. Even so, I didn't think much of it and continued finishing up my float. Then I got the worst feeling. You know that feeling when your hair stands up on the back of your neck because you can feel someone looking at you when you thought you were alone? It started like that and then got worse. I had the distinct feeling I needed to run in the pit of my stomach. I started looking around and I realized my boyfriend was also looking around nervously about the same time he noticed that I was doing it. I asked him if he had a bad feeling also. His reply was an emphatic hell yes, and he started the truck and began to drive out of the park. Since we were facing into the park, he had to make a U-turn. As we passed by the area where we had been parked, a man stepped out of the edge of the woods. About a week later, someone found bodies in the woods just past where we had been sitting at the picnic table. When the crime was eventually solved, it came out a man living in a shack on the property and working as a maintenance man for the park had killed them the Saturday night after our experience. The photo of the killer in the newspaper was a photo of the man we had seen step out of the woods and watch us leave.
Hanging out.
I had this friend who was really into the occult. Unfortunately, I was the one who got him turned on to it. We had a mutual appreciation of the paranormal and all things weird, so I thought the subject would interest him. He started going deep into the subject to the point where he wouldn't talk about anything else. He would actually interrupt a conversation and force the subject back to the occult matters. Rude, but sometimes people go through phases where their interest is all they want to talk about. It was a mostly forgivable offense. I think I should mention that this particular friend didn't have a very large friend circle. His depression and introverted nature kept him inside a lot. He didn't have the best of luck in relationships with women. His world was kind of small, and I did enjoy hanging out with him, so I did my best to be a good friend. I didn't want to just brush him off because he was acting a little weirder than normal. Honestly, for the longest time, he was a totally normal guy. We'd chat and play games together on the PlayStation. Sometimes we'd go see movies, with my boyfriend accompanying us. We all hung out at the park, went swimming. Overall, we had a good time hanging out. Things started to go downhill when he started to smoke DMT. Personally, I think psychedelics are an amazing tool that can offer insight into your life, and they should be treated with respect. My friend got to the point where he was making it himself, apparently a pretty easy thing to do after a meager amount of research, and he was smoking it daily, multiple times a day. For those of you who aren't familiar with the substance, when you smoke it, you get transported to a different world, an entirely new plane of existence. Your body and yourself don't exist anymore. You're just exploring this alternate reality dreamscape. My personal experience with it led me to see a dragon once in this kaleidoscope of a cornucopia. People see all kinds of different things there. Imagine what that does to a person when they're smoking it 30 plus times in a day. He started telling me things like he was the reincarnated Osiris. He said he was seeing Egyptian hieroglyphs all over the place in waking life. Apparently, he had hour-long conversations with entities in his bedroom even when he wasn't smoking DMT. Of course, I was very alarmed to hear all of this, and I told him he needed to take a serious break. No drugs at all for a few months so he could find solid footing in reality again. At this point, I was still hanging out with him because he obviously needed some help. And like I said before, he didn't have a lot of friends that could give him that. He was also the black sheep of the family, so I knew he wasn't getting any kind of support from them. He was really close to his sister, and I did reach out to her on Facebook to express my concerns. I pushed her to talk to him into getting some psychiatric help because he was slipping past the point of no return. I'm not sure really if she took my messages seriously since we didn't really know each other. Plus, she is at least 6 years younger than us and probably didn't grasp how serious the situation was becoming. In any case, I'll jump forward now to the part where things start to get really creepy. My boyfriend had made arrangements to hang out with our friend at the park. I didn't really want to go because I felt like I needed a break from him and his nonsensical ranting. I just couldn't deal with it on that particular day. My boyfriend said he wasn't all that bad, and we went anyway. We get to the park, and he is his usual self, ranting about Egypt and made-up gods that only he knew the truth about, etc. He also had this large hunting knife that he kept fiddling with the whole time we were on a walk. He told us that he had been using it in ceremonial magic and that it helped to banish negative thoughts. It made me extremely uneasy. He would do this thing where he would take the knife and make stabbing motions near his heart or his head, like he was mock stabbing himself, all while holding a conversation with my boyfriend or I. I think we were both really on edge and didn't know what to say or do about it. I tried to distract him from doing it by bringing up other subjects that might interest him, but he kept on with his ritual. Keep in mind, we were walking on a trail, so it wasn't like we could just say goodbye then and there. We had to walk back to our car and drop him off at his car. My boyfriend had the bright idea that we should get some lunch after our walk, even though I was doing my best to give him a look that said, "No, why do you think I want to spend any more time with this nut?" But it must have not been very effective, or my boyfriend was ignoring it. Not sure. Either way, we ended up getting in the car to go get lunch. In the car I was driving, my boyfriend was in the passenger seat, and our weirdo friend was in the back. As we're heading through a busy part of town where all the shopping and restaurants are, I hear the distinctive sound of a belt buckle coming undone. Then I hear the worst sound imaginable. I peek back out the corner of my eye and my suspicions were confirmed. This crazy dude was full on jacking off in our back seat. I mean, pants all the way down, bare ass on the seat, beating it so hard it was like he wanted to rip it off. Instantly, I felt sick to my stomach and all the nervous energy I had throughout the day popped up into my head. I was trying not to shake and trying to ignore it and drive through heavy traffic. I kinda had a freeze response, I guess. The whole time I kept thinking about the huge knife he had in his pocket, and obviously he was completely off his rocker now. I was afraid to say anything or confront him because I didn't know how he was going to react. Now this part is nuts, but my boyfriend didn't seem to notice. The whole time he kept rambling on about God knows what. I couldn't listen because my thoughts were 100% focused on driving and trying to act like I didn't know what was going on in my back seat. We went to the restaurant and my boyfriend runs inside to grab food. I'm left alone with our friend. I try to act like I'm browsing on my phone when really I'm watching and listening as hard as I can. We don't talk. My boyfriend gets back and I complain that I'm tired and it's been a long day. Let's drop him off, etc. So I drive us back to our friend's car and he doesn't get out of our vehicle. He just sits there. I have to get a little bit rude and ask him to please get out and go home. He gets out of our car and walks over to his passenger side. I started getting really scared and I suspected the worst. He pulled out a gun out of some kind of bag he had on the seat and he just walks over to our car with it. I don't know why I did this, but I was so pissed I just got out of my car and walked right up to him. I was maybe 3 feet away from him and I could see it was a loaded 9mm. I kept asking him over and over, "What are you doing?" Because apparently that's all my brain could think to do. I told him to get in his car and go home. He never said anything during this whole time. Just kind of cried and had this wild look in his eye. For whatever reason, he got back into his car and drove off. I told my boyfriend, obviously, we are never hanging out with him again and that I didn't even want him to talk to him anymore. No contact, nada. A few months pass, and he occasionally messages me through the PlayStation or texts my phone. He says a lot of random stuff and I just ignore it. Turns out he moved near Nashville. I don't know why. He had a roommate and I think their girlfriend lived there. I'm really not sure about the situation. I think maybe he's turning his life around and getting a fresh start down there.
I think it's best to cut all contact and let him regroup. I'm not interested in any kind of friendship with him, and I know he needed help beyond what I could offer. Again, I reached out to his sister and let her know that he had a gun. She managed to get it from him somehow, but it did little good in the end. I get a call around 11 p.m. one night that wakes me up. It's a man claiming he's a detective down in Tennessee, and my heart skips a beat. I start sweating and immediately ask what happened. Apparently, my former friend stabbed someone to death on Halloween Day. I don't know all the details, and the articles about it are kind of sparse. The whole thing is really surreal, and I'm just left feeling like I'm lucky that I didn't get shot last summer.
Teacher with a purpose.
I'm a very closed-off person and I just hate bothering people with my feelings, especially when it comes to what happened in 2000 in South Florida when I was in middle school. But I want to get this off my chest. It was the last week of school and I remember feeling so excited to be done with classes and carefree knowing that for the next 2.5 months I'd straight be chillin'. My classmates and I were laughing, taking pictures with disposable cameras, signing yearbooks, literally not a care in the world. Making plans for next year, how we're all going to try and request the same classes on red or black days, and we all wanted to be in one specific teacher's class. He was that teacher that connected with all the students and was just cool. He was firm but understanding. My cousin that attended the same school was a grade level above me, and she always raved about how he made learning fun. And as a kid who didn't like school, that's what I wanted. So it's towards the end of the day, and I was in my last period of class, PE. Since it was the last week of school, our coaches just let us have free play, whether we wanted to just hang out or play sports in the gymnasium. The girls' bathroom was closed due to too many tampons being flushed down, so I ended up using the bathroom outside near the courtyard. As I was heading there, I noticed a kid that was in an older grade speed walking down the hall toward the other end of the school. No backpack on since it was the last week or anything, just an angry look on his face. And he looked like he was on a mission with one hand in his pocket and the other holding up his saggy jeans. Didn't think anything of it, The bell was going to ring soon for us to be released, so I just assumed he was late for class and wanted to get there quick. I walked in the bathroom, did my thing, and I could hear one loud pop. Then a few seconds passed and a few more pops. I never heard a sound like that, so I just walked out back toward the gym, and I could see kids running in my direction with a look of terror on their faces. All of a sudden, our principal gets on the intercom and is telling everyone to get inside and lock the doors. I get to the gym door, and our coaches are shoving anyone who walks up into the gym. The lights were off, and it was pitch black. Only the light from the door that the coach was holding open helped me find my group of friends sitting on the bleachers. Everyone looked confused, and we were hearing bits of information from the people I saw running my way. They said someone was shooting, and I freaked out. And to make matters worse, back in 2000, I didn't have a cell phone, so I had no way of contacting my parents to update them. I've never been more scared than I was on that day. The school ended up locking us down for over an hour until we were finally escorted on the bus to take us home. It was a madhouse outside. Parents trying to get in and find their kids. Kids were walking home, now running home. All the kids on the bus couldn't stop talking about it, but all I could do was sit there and try not to cry. I saw him. He walked right past me. That angry look that I saw on his face was for a reason. He was literally on a mission. I finally get to my bus stop where my mom is waiting for me, and I run into her arms as we both break down. I'm not a parent yet, but I could only imagine what was going through her mind when she hears that there was a shooting at my school, and it was now almost 6 p.m. by the time I'm getting home. Another hour of crying and my parents trying to calm me down, we watch the news and find out that the student I saw come on campus when he was supposed to be suspended and shot and killed a teacher. And not just any teacher, but that one teacher that I and every other student wanted. Someone who made an actual difference in children's lives, and he just ripped away that person in a selfish act. This student came onto campus to see a girl he had a crush on to give her a gift, and this teacher tried to stop the student and redirect him off campus since he wasn't allowed to be there. So this guy took him away from his wife and kids when they all thought he was going to be coming home that night. To this day, it breaks my heart as I sit here crying. It still hits me so many years later because I never got over it and never got the help I needed to get over it. Therapy in the Spanish culture back in 2000 was not a thing. My parents thought it was meant for people who are mentally ill. I think they just assumed it would just magically go away as I got older, even though I ended up having to return to the same school the following school year. I don't put blame on my parents, that's just how they were brought up, but it still haunts me till this day. Every time the newspapers come out with an article about the anniversary, I get chills and crawl back into that dark hole I was in back then. I never really talked about it with my friends, just a few, but I hate bothering people with my sadness or memories of that day, so I always hold it in. A coworker of mine randomly brought it up since I work right down the street from my middle school, and all those feelings came back. The one good thing that I took from it is I became an educator myself. It took me many years of struggling through life and school to graduate, but I finished, and now I'm an elementary school teacher. My passion comes from wanting to make learning fun and to be that teacher that students look up to. My inspiration comes from that teacher who affected so many lives in a positive way while he was still on this earth, Mr. Grunow.
Little old lady.
I've had some creepy encounters before, but this is the only one where I am positive I was in danger. I was 17. I had really wanted to learn how to play guitar. This guy I had a crush on offered to teach me how to play. We decided to meet at a park one summer afternoon. I got there a bit early. I decided to just wait at a bench. Despite it being really nice outside that day, the park was pretty much empty. It was just me and some people off in the distance walking around the lake, but nowhere near me. I'm sitting on my phone waiting for the guy to come. All of a sudden, this lady pops up out of nowhere. She was a fairly small lady that seemed to be in her 40s or 50s. I remember her being incredibly thin and almost dirty looking, despite having her hair and makeup done well and wearing very nice clothing. She walks up to me and tells me she likes my shoes, to which I give her a big smile and tell her where I got them. That was probably my first mistake. Then she sits down and begins to start a conversation with me, asking how old I was, where I lived, went to school, all that stuff. I immediately thought this was weird, but my hometown is super safe. The police are basically just pest control here for animals that get into stores and such. The lady was incredibly small, so I knew I could take her down if needed. She was speaking with an accent and didn't seem to know much English. I figured that maybe she was new here and wanted to make some friends. I didn't want to seem rude. I kept talking to her and just giving her vague answers whenever I could. Then all of a sudden she says, "Oh, you're so beautiful. I love your skin and hair." And then she takes a picture of me. Now I'm starting to freak out, but I tell myself that maybe this was just a cultural difference and wasn't actually that weird. I just kind of didn't react and hoped the guy would show up soon. At this point, the lady had been talking to me for about 15 or 20 minutes. I'm getting pretty weirded out and trying to make my responses to her as short as possible in hopes that she'll leave. She doesn't. Finally, the guy shows up. He's a big military guy that doesn't look like someone you'd want to mess with. I immediately felt safe and made it clear that I knew him. Because this lady was sitting so close to me, he thought we knew each other, so he went up to her and introduced himself. She did not like that at all. Her face kind of fell as soon as she saw him. She tried to hide it, but still hardly spoke to him or acknowledged him at all. Instead, she turned to me and asked if he was my boyfriend. Him and I very quickly said no and made it clear we were just friends. Apparently, she completely ignored us, because almost immediately she gets up and says, "Oh, you guys are such a cute couple." She pulls out her phone and takes yet another photo of me, but this time in a way where she got my full body in the shot. After she takes the photo, she pretty much immediately leaves. I notice that she went around a big corner towards the bathrooms and just disappears. I never saw her come out of the other side. The guy I was with asks if I knew that lady. I said I didn't, and that she just started talking to me. We both kind of just went weird and go about our guitar lesson. Having my crush at the time teach me how to play guitar was clearly my main focus at this point. I pretty much forgot all about the weird encounter and didn't really mention or think about it again until about a year later. Pretty soon after my encounter at the park, I moved away to Spain for a year for college. So now, this story takes place there. I was sitting in my dorm one night, falling down a YouTube rabbit hole. I stumbled upon videos of people telling their sex trafficking stories. All of a sudden, I remembered the encounter I had with a lady at the park. I decided to Google sex trafficking in my hometown to calm my nerves, because there was no way this lady was a sex trafficker, right? Oh boy, was I wrong. Immediately, an article pops up about a woman being arrested in my hometown in September for running two sex trafficking rings in my town, just 2 months after I had met her. I'm thinking this can't be the same lady. I continue reading about how she kidnapped women and girls in my town and held them hostage at a massage center. She would sell them in the US and ship them out of the country. Stuff like that. Then I get to a mugshot and my blood goes cold. On the screen, I see a small lady with a description saying she's in her 50s. I recognize her immediately and freak out. I FaceTime the guy that taught me how to play guitar and show him the mugshot to confirm it's her. Without me saying anything, he says, "Oh, that's that lady we met in the park." I was freaked out for a day or two. The thing that probably scares me the most was that as far as I'm able to find out, she was the only person arrested. There's no way this lady worked alone. She's incredibly, incredibly tiny, to the point that I didn't feel threatened by her at all when we interacted. There's no way she would have been able to take someone without help. Yet no one else was found guilty of sex trafficking in my town or anywhere nearby. I have since moved back to my hometown. I truly think that moving away for a year may have saved me, although I still don't know if someone else has those pictures of me.
Rest Stop Snipers.
In September of 2002, my wife was in her 7th month of pregnancy with our first child. We lived in Ohio at the time and she wanted a baby shower. Since most of her family and close friends lived in Baltimore, Maryland, we planned that we would travel to Baltimore and have the baby shower there on Saturday, October 19, 2002. But October 3rd and 4th brought the horrifying realization that a serial killer was on the loose in Baltimore, D.C. area. We naturally re-examined our plans but decided to go through with them all the same. After all, the likelihood of being this sniper's victim was practically zero from a statistical point of view. My wife and I listened to the news of the Beltway sniper in the days leading up to our trip. It was getting a bit more scary as the death count raised to 9 and there were 2 additional people who had been wounded. In the 11th hour, we decided we would still go, but we would take a different turnpike into Baltimore. Around 5 p.m. on Friday, October 18, 2002, my wife and I picked up my mom and my stepsister and we set out for Baltimore. The trip was going slowly, but was otherwise uneventful. We had used the time to review the plans of what to do when we needed to stop during our trip out. The plan was that we would all go together, we don't dilly-dally, we get out of the car, into a building quickly, and vice versa, and no one stays in the car alone. Well, as usually happens on trips, around 12:45 a.m. Saturday morning, we all needed a restroom break. We pulled off into a rest stop near Frederick and parked right in front of the door to the bathroom facility. The rest area was largely empty, but there was a dark blue, late model, four-door sedan parked head-in facing the door to the restroom. I parked next to it, and we all quickly reviewed the rules. If I finished first, I would wait for them, and we would all return to the car together. Then we got out and raced to the restrooms. As I ran into the restroom area, I didn't pay too much attention to the car we parked next to, other than to make sure they didn't open their doors. The night was crisp and full of moisture. I finished first and so stood out by the exit, but stayed inside the building. The doors and the walls were all glass, so I nervously scanned the parking lot for anything off-looking. Satisfied that there was nothing ominous in the parking lot, I turned my attention to the blue sedan. I travel a lot, so I naturally took note that their plates were from New Jersey. In the front seat were two guys. The one behind the steering wheel was middle-aged. He was awake and staring back at me. Next to him was a sleeping teenager. I remember feeling a chill go down my spine as I watched him watching me. At this time, the authorities hadn't released info on the snipers, and they didn't know of the ominous role the car played in their killing spree. So, I was ignorant of the danger these two really presented. A few minutes passed before my family returned, and we all ran back to the car. In a flash, we sped away and continued on to our destination. I remember noticing something weird about their trunk. My family was poor growing up, so we sometimes had to pop out a broken lock and couldn't afford to fix it right away, so we would rig the trunk to open using a screwdriver. At the time, I thought to myself, that is what they must have done with their trunk. Turns out, it was the hole that they shot out through while staying concealed. The baby shower went well, and my wife had fun. We did not go out for meals, but slept and ate at her mom's house in Baltimore. On Sunday morning, it was time to go. We took a much more northern route going home, just to be safe. About a week later, once they captured the Beltway snipers, you can imagine the renewed chills running down my spine when in the newspaper the face of the man that had been staring at me when we stopped to pee at the rest stop, John Allen Muhammad, was staring back at me again. There's also a photo of the car we had parked next to, and scarier still, the reports that they had been captured in the exact same rest stop where we had parked next to them about a week earlier. I can only assume that the teenage boy that had been asleep next to him was Lee Boyd Malvo. Fortunately, they were both in the front seat, and this was where they had planned to hide out and sleep, and so wouldn't likely have killed at this rest stop. Therefore, I felt we weren't in danger during this encounter. Had it been elsewhere, though, we may well have been.
Sins of the Father.
This happened about 32 years ago in East Texas. My mom and dad divorced when I was 16 years old. My brother and I lived with my mom. My dad visited us once in a while, but not really on a consistent basis. He was a gambler, one of the reasons my parents split up, and tended to not come around when he was broke. But on the rare occasion that he won big, he would visit and spend money on us, then disappear again. My dad said he had a job as a shuttle driver for a local hotel. He told my brothers and me that the shuttle driving was just a cover, that he actually worked for organized crime, which he claimed owned the hotel. He said his real job was to drive out to various places in the area to pick up fugitives running from warrants and otherwise wanted by law enforcement, bring them to the hotel to hide, and then later they would move on by means my dad said he didn't know. My dad was always a blowhard and always exaggerating or out and out lying, so my brother and I just blew it off and didn't think much of the claim, until something strange happened. My dad disappeared. It was 1988. I was 22 years old and a college student still living at home. I worked as a full-time disc jockey on the overnight shift, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. at a local radio station. My middle brother was 19 years old, lived in an apartment with a friend, and worked at a nearby Dairy Queen. My youngest brother was 9 and lived at home. One day my brother called my mom and I and asked us if we knew where my dad was. He says some men came to the Dairy Queen while he was at work and asked him if he had seen his dad recently. My brother truthfully told him that he hadn't seen or heard from dad in months, and that he'd often doesn't, and he cuts off contact for months at a time. My brother said that these men didn't say who they were, but they seemed satisfied and left. He wondered if these men, or anyone, had called to talk to us or ask us where dad was. We also had not heard from him in months. The following day, my brother says the men returned to his work, and this time they flashed badges and claimed to be FBI agents. He says they were very aggressive and demanded that my brother tell them where my dad was. My brother kept insisting, truthfully, that he didn't know where he was, and that the last he heard, he worked at a local hotel as a shuttle driver. But the experience upset him, and he called my mom and I again. Upset, my mom called the hotel where my dad worked. The man she spoke to said my dad had disappeared weeks ago, and he had no idea where he went. Following day, my brother was at work when his roommate called and said that someone had apparently been in their apartment. The roommate claimed that when he got home from work, he found the sliding glass door open and the place ransacked, but nothing appeared to be missing. My brother, very upset, went to his apartment and found that, in fact, his address book was missing from the breakfast nook, and a teddy bear he recently bought for his son and a photo of his son were missing from his bedroom. Now, my brother and my mom and I were beside ourselves with anger, fear, and paranoia. We went to the local FBI office to complain that the FBI had done this and to tell them once and for all my brother does not know where my dad is. Well, as you might have guessed, the FBI claimed no knowledge of the event and claimed that they were not looking for my dad. They said none of their agents had contacted my brother. Furthermore, when my mother told them my dad had claimed that he worked for organized crime, the FBI would neither confirm nor deny that the hotel had ties to organized crime or that there was an investigation going on. My mom called the hotel again. She told the manager that men were looking for my dad, that they were terrorizing my brother, and flat out asked the guy if there was any truth to my dad's claim to be working for organized crime. The man laughed and told her, "There's no such thing as the mafia." While we were trying to make sense of all these weird details, we kept wondering why my brother was being harassed and not my mother or me. That's when I remembered a weird event that happened to me about 2 or 3 weeks prior. Because I worked overnight, I was often wide awake in the middle of the night on my days off with nothing to do. One night I went to a local cable TV company where my friend worked as a computer system operator to hang out with him for a few hours and BS a little. At about 3:30 a.m., he had a big computer job to do, so it was time for me to go home. So I left. As soon as I pulled out from his company's driveway, a car was immediately behind me, tailgating me. I mean, he was on me so quickly it scared the crap out of me. The car seemed to appear out of nowhere. He also had his high beams on and was blinding me, and I couldn't make out anything about the car behind me. I couldn't see inside to see how many people were in the car, what they looked like, or anything. I couldn't even see what kind of car it was. I changed lanes to let the tailgater pass, but he changed lanes with me. I moved again, and he again moved. He was tailgating me and blinding me, and now seemed to be following me. I stopped at the intersection and got in the left turning lane with my signal on, and he got behind me. Since there was no other traffic at all around, when the light changed, I zoomed across the intersection, streaked across all the lanes of traffic into the far right lane, and went through the intersection trying to lose him. He followed me. Now, it was absolutely clear he was for sure following me. I cut into a nearby neighborhood and tried to lose him, but he kept following me. I finally managed to zoom back out into the intersection and crossed over, went to a 7-Eleven at the corner, jumped out, ran inside, and yelled to the clerk that someone was following me. As I did, I saw the car that was following me cut through the parking lot of the 7-Eleven, and for the first time, I got a look at the car. It was a late model tan-colored four-door, and there were two white guys in it. The clerk just blew me off and said I was exaggerating, that it was probably just kids messing with me, and to let it go. I left, but I was still spooked by it, and didn't want to go straight home. I was afraid that they might follow me, and I didn't want them to know where I lived, so I went to my workplace. I knew that the disc jockey on the air that night would be my friend Paula, so I decided to go visit her on the air for a little while and hang out and calm down. I told her what happened, and hung out for about 2 hours. She also felt it was probably just some punks being jerks, and that calmed me down. But when I got home, now over 2 hours since the car harassed me, the damn car was at my house. As I was coming down the street to my apartments and about to turn right, I saw the damn car pull out of my apartments, and as it passed me, the SOBs flashed their high beams on and off at me. It was them. I panicked and called Paula at the radio station and told her what happened. She was freaked. She was like, "Oh my God, why would they wait for you at home? Who is this? Call the police." I freaked out as to how they could possibly know where I lived. Why would they wait 2 hours for me, and then when they finally saw me, flash their lights at me and just leave? I mean, what was going on? But now, remembering that event and putting it together with my brother's FBI visit and apartment break-in, it seemed obvious that it was all tied together. I hadn't thought about it before, but now I remembered my car was actually my dad's car. He gave it to me about 2 months earlier when he got a new one. So if anyone had been looking for my dad, they might have thought I was him, and when they saw me coming home, realized I'm not and just left. But who was messing with us and why? Where was my dad? Why are these strange people harassing us? My mom, my brother, and I went to the local police and filed a missing persons report and a complaint. We spoke to a very nice detective. About 5 days later, we got a call from the detective. He had solved the whole strange case. It turns out my dad disappeared because he owed his employers more than $50,000 in gambling debt. The detective confirmed that my dad did work from some unsavory characters, but said they weren't organized crime per se. He had no idea if my dad was shuttling fugitives or not. He said my dad was hiding out in Nevada, and that he had spoken to him. He was alive and well, but hiding. We asked then, who were those men and why are they bothering my brother? The detective explained that it's not uncommon for unsavory bounty hunters and debt collectors to impersonate law enforcement and call and harass people. My brother asked, how did they get into his apartment? The detective said a sliding glass door is easy peasy to open, and they probably stole the address book hoping it had my dad's contact information in it. They stole the teddy bear and pictures to use to scare my brother, which worked. I asked the detective why the men only harassed my brother and not me and my mom. The detective said because my dad had used my brother as a reference on his job application at the hotel and gave my brother's address and phone number. The FBI agents probably figured he was close to my dad and either maintained contact with him or, if threatened, would contact him. So, my dad eventually turned back up in town and acted like nothing had ever happened. He never spoke of the incident, and we never brought it back up. I guess he got the money he owed him. I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Just the Terror with Nick Guerra. Make sure to check out True Scary Stories with Edie on Tuesdays. Give it 5 stars. And stay scared, uglies.